superheroes having sex, blood-splattered fight scenes. I'm talking about R-rated movies. Comic books that were once kid-friendly have gotten an edgy makeover. The graphic comic concerns next.
Tonight on the Big Planet Comics podcast, what's in your refrigerator could kill you. Also, how to KO comics that may corrupt your kids.
Welcome to a sexy, sexy, violent, blood-spattered podcast.
Indeed. All right, so my name's Kevin.
My name's Jared.
I'm Nick.
This is the Big Planet Comics podcast number 30.
Woo!
Yeah, it gets harder for me to say every time for some reason.
Yeah,
after 30 times.
Pretty high.
You think I'd be used to it. All right, so you can listen to this podcast on your mobile phone.
Yep.
On your iPad.
Your pocket calculator.
On your pocket calculator. All right. You can subscribe to this on iTunes.
Web TV.
You can use it on your Newton device.
Yep. Bluetooth.
Check out our MySpace.
Check it out. Check us out on Friendster. Anyway, so Big Planet Comics podcast number 30. Check it out on iTunes. Check us out on Facebook / Big Planet Comics. And check out our Twitter @ Big Planet Comics.
Yep.
So maybe people are wondering what that was at the beginning.
That was our theme song.
Yeah, that was our theme song. But what was that before that?
Something disturbing.
It was disturbing.
Threatening.
Yeah, so basically, Fox 5 News came to the Vienna store and interviewed Jared and some of our customers. They've been showing the ads for it all week.
They didn't interview me, jerks.
Didn't interview. I think I saw you reading a comic with somebody maybe on their knees videotaping you or something.
Probably.
But so we've been waiting and waiting for the thing to air, and then we just watched it.
Yep. We did.
And that was the little sample. That was like their lead into it.
Yeah, because the promo lead-in was very scandalous.
Well, so was that.
That's true.
You'll never believe.
So I think we should talk a little bit about the video.
Okay.
What happened?
What happened?
So basically the idea of it was they were talking about how all the new DC comics are too sexy.
Too violent.
Too violent. They're showing heads get bashed off. It would make Betty and Veronica blush.
According to them.
Yeah. According to them.
I don't know. I could see maybe Betty.
Not Archie, okay with it.
Yeah.
I think Veronica would be fine. She's pretty cutthroat.
Yeah. Archie would be like, oh, hell yeah.
I'm sure Reggie Mantle has like a subscription to Catwoman.
Yeah.
But so what did they do? They went through. They kind of showed a bunch of sexy stuff and a bunch of violent stuff. And they were like, this stuff isn't for kids. And then they took it to a middle school and showed it to a bunch of kids.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, kids, check out these sexy comics. What do you think? The kid's like, oh, these are cool.
They got a lot of colors. And then the other kid was like, this has a lot of sexual activity in it.
It does.
He doesn't even know what sexual activity is.
He doesn't even know what
sexual activity is. He's like, look, they're having sex. And it's just like a picture of Batman swinging through the streets.
So this thing kind of blew up a little bit before it aired.
Yep.
Somebody ended up posting the clip on Bleeding Cool.
Yep, it was up on YouTube with some other comments.
And it was up on YouTube, and then Comic Book Legal Defense Fund actually put out a little note that was like, hey, how to protect yourself from these kind of smear campaigns and what to do when people come in and, you know.
Yeah, because their point is that, like, not certainly with this case, but in the past there have been examples where, like, TV crews have showed up and being, like, just barging into a store saying, where's your porn? Why are you selling to children? Like, a very offensive style stuff, so... They have a very good thing on the CBLDF.org website that says, you know, what are your rights if a camera crew comes in? How do you handle this sort of stuff? It's very good. You should definitely check it out.
Yeah, well, it's not like they assaulted us. They were just like, hey, can we talk to you about the new DC comics? We're okay, whatever.
Yeah, so we'll put a link to the CBLDF thing up on this podcast. And hopefully I recorded this newscast, so I'm going to try to post that up on YouTube and get that up there, too. We'll see. That might take a couple days. But
No SOPA yet, so you're good.
No SOPA yet. Yeah. So we'll see. If YouTube is working tomorrow, they may have blacked it out.
True.
So, that's about it for that, right?
Yeah.
So we had a couple other things we wanted to talk about. We got some more votes in our Facebook Best of the Year poll.
We have 9 polls up. We're covering all kinds of categories. We had 3 more go up last week, and we had 1 go up today. And on Friday, we'll have best writer?
Best writer, and best
Monday
ongoing series, and best graphic novel.
Best graphic novel will be Monday, and that'll be our last one. So go to our Facebook page and throw in your votes.
and vote. Your vote counts towards us saying who won on the podcast.
It's true. Yeah,
it's important stuff. So last week we had best new series, best reprint, and best artist.
Yep.
True.
And then this week we've got, what do we have here? We got best miniseries, best for kids, and best single issue. Yep. I was just going to read the winners, but I think I'm going to go through these.
They are pretty interesting.
Yeah. So let's start out with best miniseries. Let's see who got zero votes.
Oh, this is the sadness.
Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. Boo.
Yeah, we like it. Or are you booing it because you think it sucks?
No, no. I'm booing the zero votes.
None of these things are bad. These all
these are
to
our
top 10.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're not bad.
No.
This is like number 8.
Yeah. So another thing with zero votes, The Rinse.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
It is. It's pretty good.
With one vote. We've got Key of Z, one of Nick's favorites.
Yeah, yep. Probably I voted for it.
And we've got Witch Doctor, deserved maybe more than one vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for best of, not best. Definitely top 10.
With two votes, we've got No Things with two votes. With three votes, we've got Spaceman,
which is
fair. It's not done. I think it's going to end up being awesome, really, but you know. And then with four votes, we've got Criminal Last of the Innocent.
So amazing.
Deserved 1,000 votes.
Speaking of Betty and Veronica.
Strange Town and Luther Strode.
So good.
Strange. Deserved 10,000 votes. and then Axe Cop 2, Bad Guy Earth, has got 5 votes.
Nice.
Which is good. That's a fun series. But the winner.
Yes, yes.
Who is Jake Ellis?
I believe that's what we picked.
That is what we picked. Wait. So we picked the winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to Best for Kids. So a couple of these. We had a couple write-ins.
No DC Comics though, right?
What we had on here, we had Red Hood and the Outlaws, Catwoman.
Yeah, yeah.
And Batman Dark Knight.
And Batman Dark Knight. Is that the one with the face, the Joker face cut off? Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. That was in there. All right. So zero votes is Rust.
Well, this category is interesting because unless you have kids, a lot of these are not picked up by a big audience. It's like series. So.
Yeah. And kids don't vote in polls.
Kids don't vote in polls. I don't even know if kids are allowed on Facebook.
Not until they're 18 to vote.
They got
to
go on Baby Book. Baby Book. They'll wear Baby Gap. All right, so with zero votes, we got Rust, Sidekicks, Three Thieves, Princeless, Bad Island.
Oh, my God.
All good books.
Those are all amazing.
All really good books. Yeah, it's unfortunate, especially Princeless, because we love those guys.
Yeah. Well, this category is interesting because I opened it up so that you could vote for more than one, because some people were complaining that they wanted to do, like, I had two favorites. And it also opened up a lot more write-in votes for this one.
And still nobody voted for Bad Island.
Nah, that's true.
That's terrible.
And we did have some write-in votes. I'm going to do those last because one of those was a thing that I feel like we kind of messed up and missed.
We blundered.
All right, so with one vote, we've got Anya's Ghost.
Yep.
Snarked. Awesome. Great, great, great series. We love Mr. Langridge.
Yep.
And Donald Duck Lost in the Andes, which is...
Oh, man. Didn't someone just come in the store today and said how much their kids loved it? Wasn't that William? He's like, my kids are reading that all the time.
We need to open up a store in Europe. And then Donald Duck will get like 600,000 votes.
Yeah.
And these other comics will be like, we do not know what these comics are. That was my vague European accent. Yeah.
Apparently, we're opening up in Eastern Europe.
Yeah. And then with two votes, we had Super Dinosaur.
So good.
A comic that kids love.
Yep. And us.
And us.
And dinosaurs.
With three votes, we have Amulet 4, The Last Council.
Nice.
That's a good one. And but the winner.
Yes.
With four votes, Zeta the Space Girl. Yeah, go Zeta. Zeta. Zeta.
I thought you were going to hit the wah wah.
Yeah, so Zeta's awesome.
It's
not
really good.
It's not what we picked.
No.
What did we pick?
Oh, man.
God, I can't even remember.
Super
Dinosaur. It was Bad Island.
I'm pretty sure it was Super Dinosaur.
I think it was,
it was Super Dinosaur.
Bad Island. Dinosaur. We're in the final contention.
So we had a couple of write-ins. We had Batman Brave and the Bold, which is a good series.
Very good.
We had Allie, and Allie had kind of a picture book thing out this year, which was very cool, but we kind of didn't put it on because I don't know why.
It's
just didn't make it because there was a lot of good stuff. And then there were two write-ins for Tiny Titans, and I can't believe that we missed Tiny Titans. I'm getting good at this.
It's true.
So I think that was a little bit of an oversight on our part. But, you know.
That's why we have write-ins.
Whatever.
So you can correct our mistakes.
All right. So next up is best single issue. People were allowed to pick more than one on this one, like before. We had a lot of things with zero votes on this, though.
Yeah. This one, I feel like single issue people have, like, a passion. Like, for best kids comics, some people just haven't read it, but like this one, you'd be like, I love that issue.
People don't love their kids. So with zero votes, we had Bowman number 1, Boys 59, Fantastic Four 600, Optic Nerve 12, and Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 1 with zero votes.
Wow. Really?
Jeepers.
Jeepers. Oh, jeepers, sadness. Fellas. And then with two votes, we had Daredevil 7.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And who is Jake Ellis number 1?
Nice. Nice. That's not bad.
And then it jumps up to 7 votes for Uncanny X-Force number 18,
nice.
Which was our pick for best single issue. But the winner.
Yes.
Non-player number one.
Wow.
Congratulations, non-player.
You won something.
You won. So I'm just going to keep this applause going. These guys like us a lot. Yeah, so you should just go and vote, and we're going to talk about the other three next time.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into some viewer mail. You guys want to do it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Our first question this week comes from another email in my email account, so I gotta go find that. Sorry.
We're doing high-tech stuff
here. We're getting super high-tech.
We don't have this all memorized.
We got iPads. We got Windows with screens on
it. We got Windows with Macs.
Windows with screens attached to buildings.
So our first question comes from Christian, and he asked how we thought Fox 5 handled the news report.
That was fast.
Yeah. Wow. He was asking more about the promo, but that we've watched the news report, I mean, we kind of talked about it.
Yeah. The promo was...
The promo was very sensationalist.
Yeah.
Fear mongering.
Muckraking.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how you get people to watch, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to be like, oh, listen to our fair, balanced report on DC Comics Real.
Yeah. They're not going to be like, this Wednesday, comics are terrible for your kids, but it's okay because you don't have to buy them for them.
But, see, but that's the thing. Like,
there are good kids for your comics as well. Or comics for your kids.
Yeah.
Kids for your comics, too. They got such good hands. They can draw some little details. No, like, I think this is at a disadvantage. Admittedly, I'm prejudiced pro comics here, but like, comics, I find, are inherently interesting. Like, there have a lot of superhero movies out. You just got to throw up a picture of Batman or Wonder Woman or something, and people are like, oh, I remember Batman. You know, it's like you've got a lot of graphic images to work with of, like, here's a cool drawing, as opposed to a lot of news stories where you just don't have video footage or anything to show. So I think you could have easily done, like, DC Comics relaunches their thing with a sensational news storyline, and that would have been enough.
Well, they might have done that, actually, like, when it happened.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. But the actual report was pretty bad.
Yeah.
They had this like quack on there.
God, that child psychologist was such a creeper, man.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he seemed really creepy to me. He was like,
apparently we didn't talk about this enough.
Yeah, he was like, Catwoman's basically just fictionalized Playboy. Show me some more of those. And it was I don't know, it was just weird. He's like, these are all going to turn your kids into perverts.
He's like, look at this. This picture of Batman punching somebody in the face is next to a Lego ad.
Yeah. That was funny. He was like, why are there ads for Legos in here? That stuff's for kids. And I was like, well,
I love Legos.
Actually, probably lots of our customers buy Legos.
Yeah.
And I would say a lot of people who read comics have kids.
And also, when I was a kid, I would read that anyway.
And also, if Lego wants to put an ad in your comic, you're going to put it in there.
Yeah.
Also, it's not 1955.
Yeah. They're not. And they weren't sex Legos.
Yeah. That's true.
But towards the end, they did say, hey, at Big Planet Comics, these guys will say these comics aren't for kids if they're not, and they'll point them to the kids section.
Yep, and they said there are rating systems on these comic books.
And they're like, and there are a bunch of comics in there, and then they didn't talk about any of those.
No, why would they?
Yeah, they just showed the kids' comics.
They're not like, here.
Back to the boobs.
Yeah. But when they went to the middle school, that was the funniest.
That was the best part.
It was so funny.
I was like, what are you doing?
Well, the kid's like, whoa,
it's got a lot of colors. Yeah. So that's how we felt about it.
Yeah.
He also says about the promo, a nice cameo by Jared.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I love cheering today. All right. So our next question is from Dave French. He says, I enjoy your podcast. If you're looking for ideas to make it even longer.
Oh, yes.
I don't think anybody wants this thing to be longer.
Jesus, no.
He said, you guys should do a segment called Who Would Win in a Fight Between.
Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Nick and Kevin.
As a kid, I would spend hours arguing who would win a fight between the Hulk and Superman.
Oh,
I think Superman, but anyway, that's a whole podcast
but
of its
Hulk,
own.
Strongest one there is.
The stronger he gets, the stronger he gets. Yeah.
What if Superman's really mean to him and he gets him hangry?
This is not one of the options.
Oh, okay.
So he says, here are some possible suggestions. Mitzelplick versus Impossible Man. Go.
Well, it already happened.
Oh, do I have a ding, ding, ding?
What?
The other one. There you go.
Round one. All right, here we go. We got Mr.
Wait, you said it already happened?
Yeah, it actually already happened. And there was a Silver Surfer Superman comic that came out in like the 90s.
Who
where,
won?
They teamed up against Superman and Silver Surfer. So
Uh-oh.
I think they would be good friends.
I think they would be friends too. But I think I think Mr. Mitzelplick would win because Mr. Mitzelplick can change all of reality.
That's true.
And Impossible Man can only change himself, the molecules in himself.
I think he could change reality too.
He can. I looked on the Wikipedia page today.
I don't believe he's not up.
But I brought it comes up for a second and then the SOPA thing comes up. So I took a screenshot of it right before
nice,
it came up.
Nice. Yeah.
So that's that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Flaming Carrot versus the Tick. This one's easy for me.
Oh, wow.
The Tick.
Yeah, I gotta go with the Tick.
Well, I'll go with Flaming Carrot because he has a gun.
Yeah, but the Tick is like bulletproof. He would just punch his head off.
Is he?
Yeah. He would just put out his fire and eat his carrot head.
I thought he was only nigh invulnerable.
Yeah. He can take a few bullets.
Flaming Carrot would stick a plunger on his face.
He can take a few bullets before he pulls his face off.
That's true.
Use a spoon on him.
They both have lots of friends.
Yeah.
That's true.
There's the Mystery Men, and then there's Arthur and Deflator Mouse.
Yeah. They didn't say they had like backup, though. It's just the two.
That's true. It doesn't say anything about backup on here. All right, so...
what do we got? What's next?
Next, we got Brenda Starr versus Judge Parker.
Ooh. Well, I think if it was a physical fight, I think probably Judge Parker would win. But
really?
He's so old. But then
that's true.
She would have had recorded it with a hidden camera in her purse.
Because she's a reporter.
She would have talked about it in the expose, and he would have gone to jail. So she would win ultimately.
But he's a judge, so he would have found himself not guilty. And then he would go to her house in the middle of the night and kill her. The thing with Judge Parker is when the comic started, he was young and it was all about him.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he like rising attorney Parker?
No, he was a judge.
Oh wow.
So and then it became about the young attorney. And Judge Parker was just kind of a guy that was there.
Oh, did he ever become Justice Attorney? Justice Parker?
That would have been awesome.
Well, if he's... Supreme Court Justice Parker? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It doesn't say anything here on my thing that doesn't have any information.
On your blank piece of paper?
Yeah, it doesn't say anything. So
we need more background.
I would check Wikipedia, but it took me like 5 times to get that screenshot thing. So nice. I was like, who is Impossible Man?
Oh, you don't know Impossible
Man? Oh, no, I don't know. Yeah. I guess I've read like one story with Impossible Man, like the
Oh, yeah, I'm thinking Molecule Man. Who's Impossible
he's
Man?
He's the green dude with the moon head.
He's like green and purple. Yeah. I think I've read like his first, yeah. I think it was like Fantastic Four 10 or 11 or something like that.
He always beats the Fantastic Four.
So what a jerk.
Yeah.
I
almost said something.
So he says, okay, the last one is obviously a comic strip, but they could battle for the longest drawn out storyline.
Nice.
So thanks, Dave, for sending in the question. If anybody else has any questions, you can send them into podcast@bigplanetcomics.com.
Or just ask them this in person.
Yeah, you can ask them in person, too, if you see us.
But we might forget, so email them, too.
Don't come looking for us, though, because we know a judge. And he will find us not guilty, and then we will come to your house and kill you in the middle of the night. All right, let's do some reviews.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
What time is it?
It's time for reviews.
Hey! I'm glad they didn't look... I'm glad that Fox didn't look at any Louis Riel comics.
Yeah, they would have been like, oh, tonight comics are boring.
Tonight.
Yep.
Tonight you're educated about Canadian history.
Do I have crickets on here? Tonight, bombs,
drugs in comics.
That's what they should have on Fox News. Tonight, how to make a bong from regular household items and read Catwoman comics. All right, so the first comic we have this week has a lot of sex in it. It's called Danger Girl Revolver #1 by Andy Hartnell and Chris Madden.
This is sexy, sexy time right
here. It does have sexy times in it. It says right big on the cover, like Campbell is the first name, but J. Scott Campbell had nothing to do
with
this comic.
Campbell created this character.
Yeah. So,
this was a comic.
It was a comic. Danger Girl Revolver. Who remembers what this was about?
They go on some of their mission, and there's the dude and someone else.
No, man, they find a Peruvian mummy.
Yep.
And then they're like, oh, we got to go to Peru. And then it's over.
Basically, it's like a kind of a long chase scene. There's like an action scene at a wedding.
You can read this in about 10 seconds.
Yeah. But I don't know. Would you want to?
I wouldn't want to take longer reading it.
Yeah, it was okay.
It was okay. I think the problem is that it suffers in comparison to the original Danger Girl, like all later Danger Girl series, and that it's more cartoony and it doesn't have Campbell's art and it's just not as snappy or fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you like Danger Girl, you probably like it. Or if you're a little kid who wants to see some boobs. Definitely.
Some side boob.
Yeah.
That's what little kids are into. Yeah. I just found that out like when they took those comics to the middle school.
Yeah, it was groundbreaking.
They were like, this has a lot of sexual activity in it. I like it. It's got colors. Yeah, so I don't know. Danger Girl Revolver. The art, it's Campbell-ish.
Yeah. No, it's not.
It is.
It's not as like, it doesn't have as much personality, but it's good. It's not bad.
No, it's not. Yeah.
It's just whatever.
It's just whatever.
Yeah.
So put that on the next issue.
It's just whatever.
You can quote
Danger
us.
Girl Revolver #2. It's just whatever. All right. So moving on to Diablo #2 by, or this is Diablo 3 number 2, I think.
What?
This is by Aaron Williams, who wrote Diablo number 1, but also wrote North 40, PS 238, and I think Nodwick is the other one, yeah. And the art in this is by Joseph LaCroix, who is pretty awesome.
He is pretty rad. Well, where we left off in the first Diablo issue, the dude got his sword. I don't even remember any of the character's name.
I think his name's Diablo.
Yeah. Or it will become Diablo. Yeah.
It's Diablo, and then the woman's name is Cody, I think.
Yeah. And then there's the other Diablo, and then the third Diablo.
But so what happens in this issue?
Not much. Well,
that's true.
That's the thing. That's the thing with this issue. I was like a little bored by it just because there's
like the in between issue,
4 or 5 pages where they just talk about this sword without actually describing anything about the sword. And then they get caught. Then they go for a walk and then it ends.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that is basically all that happens in this issue.
It's some really cool monsters show up. They're drawn awesome
on the last page. Yeah.
And so the art in this is so great that it keeps you in it. And the writing is okay.
No, it's just, not bad.
But I think that was the thing about the first issue is it avoided like all the here's a fantasy world or here's a video game or here's a sci-fi world. We just have this huge data dump. They skip that in the first issue, and this is the second issue where they get back to that.
Yeah. There's a little bit of it in the first issue. Like when he sees the like the relief in the wall that kind of describes the prophecy or whatever. But yeah, this issue is very much like, now let's get to where the story is.
Right.
And it seems like the next issue is going to be good. I still enjoyed it. I'm definitely going to keep reading it.
Me too.
It's just not, you know, it's just not the strongest issue.
Yeah, it didn't have that punch of that first issue.
Still awesome art, though.
But the art's so good.
Still very, very awesome art.
Yeah.
Very cartoony. Well, not very cartoony. It kind of reminds me of Dan Hipp, the guy that did Amazing Joy Buzzards.
Yeah.
Looks like, what's his face? Joe the Barbarian.
Sean Murphy.
Sean Murphy,
I can definitely see that as
little
well.
Little Mignola influence.
No, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to the Fearless soft cover by Mark Sable and David Roth with art by PJ Holden. Fearless was a 4-issue miniseries that came out in 2007.
Not to be confused with Fear itself, the Fearless.
Well, now it will be. But I guess when Fearless came out initially, it sold like every issue sold out and went out of print almost immediately.
Really?
Yeah.
They probably didn't print a lot.
I'm thinking it's because they didn't print a lot. This was okay, but it was a little. Nick, I'm gonna let you describe this one because I think you enjoyed
the basic gist of this is the main character, his name is Fear, and he takes this kind of anti-fear drug that kind of basically makes him fearless, I guess. Like, and then he beats bad guys up. But the kind of twist in this is that he's like, in real life, he's just scared of everything. He's like super frightened.
Yeah, like clinically problematic. Yeah, he's scared.
And so it's not clear if his life, it's changed his life a lot because there's this girl he liked, but he couldn't talk to her. Now when he's on these drugs, he can like talk to her and they're like going out and stuff. And it's cool. It's an interesting story of like how that affects his life. And then it's mixed with like the story of him trying to take down this drug lord and or crime boss. And then his crime boss's son is directly tied to his origin. And
I guess kind of one of the main things is that his drug that powers him and gets rid of his fear is running out.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of dubious, like what his real intentions are. It's like, does he really want to fight crime, or does he just want to get more drugs?
Right. Yeah. And is he doing stuff only because the drug's making him? Like, would he actually be a hero without it? Or yeah.
And it's interesting. There's kind of a surprising ending. Mm-hmm. I thought it was all right. Mark Sable's written some good stuff. He wrote Grounded, and now he's writing Graveyard of the Empires.
Yeah.
I don't know PJ Holden's art, but it's very much in
it's
the
cool.
It kind of reminds me of Michael Avon Oeming a little bit.
I was gonna say,
especially the stuff he did in like Tachyo.
Yeah.
And
really good coloring on this one too.
Yeah. It's a solid, you know, it's very much like a miniseries that came out from Image in 2007.
Yeah.
If that means anything. It's got that kind of invincible feel to it, but it's not quite as good as that. But I think it's definitely worth a read if you're looking for just like a quirky little superhero book.
Yeah.
That's about all there is to say about it. It's kind of a quick read for what it is, but it was fun.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to Halo Fall of Reach Invasion number 1. This was a thin week. I'm gonna point that out right now. Typically, we wouldn't talk about, you know, whatever
video
newest Halo series is, but it's good to check in every once in a while.
This is like the fifth like Halo Fall of Reach series or something.
Yeah. It's this one is Covenant. No, this one's Invasion.
See?
Yeah. So this is written by Brian Reed, who used to be a writing partner of Brian Michael Bendis on
Ms. Marvel,
Spider-Woman and Ms. Marvel. Yeah. And the art is by Felix Ruiz, and he's definitely channeling Alex Maleev a little bit in this, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yep. which has become kind of the house style for the Halo series since the first one was by Bendis and
Maleev.
This entire issue, what is it about?
It's about
obstacle course.
It's about an obstacle course, and it's about Master Chief putting on his armor for the first time, basically.
That's all it's about.
Yeah, it's kind of about fan service.
But it's awesome.
The thing is,
did you think it was awesome?
Well, I thought it was really fun. I mean, all right, I will say up front, I have never played Halo in my entire life. Or if I did, I was so bad at it, I blanked it out of my memory. but it was kind of cool. I mean, obviously you get the thing of like, yeah, he puts on his armor for the first time. Yeah. Whoa, whatever. But then you get to see him actually use it in this weird like test of him, which is literally a fighting combat obstacle course. And I thought that was cool.
Yeah, it was all right.
They did have a lot.
That was kind of interesting. But it definitely felt a little bit like, well, I mean, it felt a lot like fan service because there was just like a couple parts where like here, he just got a, what's the lady's name?
Cortana.
He's like,
and that's like a full page splash. Yeah. And if you haven't played Halo, you'd be like, why? Who cares about this?
Here's his AI, Cortana. And there's like a giant splash page. You're like, oh, what's that? Like, cool.
Yeah,
I kept waiting for him to be like, we gotta get a ride out of here in this warthog.
Yeah, it's a full splash page.
Yeah, like, yeah. Nice. So it's kind of that kind of thing. I mean, if you're a fan of Halo, it kind of shows how the invasion of Reach started.
Yeah.
It's whatever. I like Halo, but I've always found the mythology of Halo to be kind of boring.
Yeah,
it's not too interesting.
Yeah. So I probably won't read the next issue of this.
No.
It's a video game tie-in.
God, this is such a bland week so far.
I know. It's unfortunate. At least we had the whole Fox News thing
We had a few good comics in here.
We do have a few good comics. So let's move on to the best comic of the week, Lord of the Jungle number 1 by Arvid Nelson and Robert Castro.
Oh, Arvid Nelson.
Yeah. So this is...
Tarzan.
This is... I know. Everybody can tell we're not going to like this. Do we even need to talk about it? Basically, this is Dynamite's Tarzan series.
Yeah.
But I guess they're not allowed to use the Tarzan?
Yeah, there are some trademark issues with the Tarzan name. You can't just slap it on anything, which seems weird because it seems like it should be in public domain at this point. Well, I think by the time the last book came out...
Oh, good point.
It was still owned by whatever the original company publishing it was.
Yeah.
And then, so those rights stayed with his family at that point. And so I think as long as they kept licensing it with the way laws are now. So you can use the content of the first book. You just can't use the trademark name. So anyway, on the cover, at least this is it's a weird thing, but so this is basically follows the plot of the first book.
Yeah. I mean, the basic plot of the first novel, at least as far as Kevin and I could remember, is the parents of Tarzan or the Lord and Lady Greystoke, who are British aristocracy, get stranded on the African coast and are forced to raise, or she's very pregnant. They have their baby there and he is raised up to become Tarzan, Lord of the Apes.
Yeah, when a group of apes sort of fight each other and one of the apes' children is killed and then the ape steals Tarzan and replaces him with a dead baby ape.
Yeah, it's basically the thing, like, this mother ape, her baby dies, and in this issue it shows it's a very violent death. She finds the baby Tarzan and says, you know, basically to herself, I will raise this young infant, whatever it is, as my own child.
Actually, I think she says, whoa!
She does, yeah. There's definitely a part also where they're singing a Lady Gaga song, where they're like, rah, ah, 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 ah. Yeah.
There's definitely like
five... Don't soap on me.
There's five pages of like, ooh, ah, ah.
Yeah, the apes seem very... like hyper intelligent. It's kind of weird.
Well, no, there's also like a weird cameo by this other faction of apes that wears like clothing.
Yeah.
I was waiting for them to show the Statue of Liberty.
This is before the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Oh no, what do we call it? Beneath the Tarzan of the Apes.
Beneath the Tarzan of the Apes. Yeah.
So this is written by Arvid Nelson, who's written some pretty good stuff.
Yep.
He wrote Rex Mundi and a couple other things.
Warlord of Mars and some other ones.
Yeah, but I just fell flat for me.
Yeah. This is for the punch of the first appearance of Tarzan, I think it spent too much time on his childhood. Like, he's basically still a baby in this.
Yeah, he's not even in this.
Yeah I mean, and he's like, basically just at the end.
It should have been like a, you know, Amazing Fantasy 15, like two pages of him, and then boom, he's Tarzan kicking butt.
Yeah, he should have just jumped into it and then have him like have some
flashback or something.
Yeah, I mean, and it definitely has that feel of like, you know, the kind of thing you would see at the very beginning of a movie that's like 30 seconds long or whatever.
Before the credits.
But, you know.
But anyway, there's Tarzan if you're missing out on Tarzan.
There is Tarzan if you're missing out on Tarzan. if you're and that might not even be enough for this one, to be honest. I mean,
yeah,
well, I don't know.
This is again another one where we'll definitely have to try and check out the issue two and see if there's anything that really punches this up.
I'm not gonna this read first issue with this.
No,
I don't know. Yeah, we can't say the T word though, it's copyrighted.
Yeah, I'm not gonna read the second issue of this book with the Phil Collins music,
Lord Greystoke of the Jungle,
with Christopher Lambert. Anyway, so yeah, that's Lord of the Jungle, number one.
Woo.
Woo. All right, so moving on to a book that's actually pretty awesome. This is Marvel First 1970s softcover. I'm going to say by Various.
Various. It's got a lot of people.
There are a few comics in here.
It's like Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Roy Thomas, Ross Andrew, a million other people. Gene Colan, Jerry Conway, you know, guys from the 70s.
Yep. The 70s crew.
But this has a lot of really cool stuff in it. It's got the first issue of War. Basically, like, we talked about the Marvel First 1960s thing on the other podcast, where they just had, like, first appearances or, like, first issues of ongoing series with characters all collected into a big book.
Yeah.
And this has a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of, like, Beast's first appearance as, like, the furry Beast.
Which is from, like, Marvel Team-Up 11 or something like that.
Amazing Adventures.
Amazing Adventures. And then it's got Warlock number one. It's got a really cool Man-Thing story, which was, like, the first solo Man-Thing story, which is this kind of ink wash thing by somebody really good. I can't remember who drew it, actually. Maurice Severin, maybe?
Something amazing.
It's got, like,
art,
the origin of Luke Cage and...
yeah, his first issue. And it's got, like, a first issue of some Western stuff. It really runs the gamut of...
Yeah.
Some Night Nurse.
First issue of Dracula. You forget how much stuff, like, Marvel is just... In a decade, they put out so many different comics.
It's there's a Killraven, an adaptation of War of the Worlds starring Killraven.
Yeah. And there's a Hellcat origin story.
But that's actually not Hellcat. That's a different character.
Is it?
Yeah, she looks the same. Her name's just the Cat. But it's not Patsy Walker.
Oh, weird.
Get your back straight, buddy.
Is it before they brought in all the...
Looks like Hellcat.
Patsy Walker was still just a model then.
Aw.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think this is awesome. I thought the first one was great, too. The first one obviously has a few more seminal issues than this one does.
Spider-Man and FF.
Exactly. But this still definitely has some cool stuff. And the thing with this, I think it's got more obscure stuff that maybe you haven't seen before.
Yeah, definitely.
It's got Red Wolf.
Red Wolf, which was they then dropped almost immediately and turned into Man-Wolf, I'm pretty sure. Or Werewolf by Night. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But no, it's cool. It's got like some Dick Ayers war stuff in it, you know.
Oh, yeah. They had some more comics. Like, I think this is, like, you're totally right that this is the sort of thing. It's like, you know, so much early Marvel stuff, but this is kind of like when it's more obscure and I find much more interesting. This is just like the best present to ever give someone, or I think to get. It's awesome.
It's got Jav talking Luke Cage. And,
It's got the first Johnny Storm Ghost Rider, which is actually like one of my favorite when I was a kid. That was like one of the first old comics I bought. It was like the first. Did I say Johnny Cage?
You said Johnny Storm.
Wait, but wait, now I can't remember.
Johnny Cage is from Mortal Kombat. Johnny Storm is the Human Torch. Well, this is Johnny Blaze.
Johnny Blaze. Yeah, yeah. Method Man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's actually a really good comic. I reread that and along with the Man Thing today, and it's just awesome. Yeah.
Oh, we also got Monster of Frankenstein and Shaun of the She-Devil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's got a bunch of covers and stuff, too. It's a cool book.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, so that's Marvel First 1970s. Something we actually liked.
I dig it.
Yeah.
It's Jive.
All right, so moving on to Memorial Number 2 by Chris Roberson, who's been writing iZombie and a bunch of other stuff. He finished up the failed storylines of Superman Grounded and Wonder Woman Grounded.
Lucky guy.
Whatever that Wonder Woman thing was called.
His great-grandfather sang Old Man River, right?
Yep, and then Rich Ellis, whose father is Warren Ellis, drew this.
Yeah,
I actually really like the art in this.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, but Memorial is a cool story. It's very Fables-ish.
Yeah, we kind of covered this. We did the first issue. We're like, we'll come back to number two and see where this one's going. And this definitely builds up much more of the storyline of this girl who's found a magical doorknob that allows her to walk between worlds. And she's found herself in the fantasy world and now finds her way back and is trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, you get a better sense of the universe.
And like the bad guys, there's definitely a court of shadow where
the adversaries, if you will.
That I found kind of weird because
Geppetto.
Much of this ground had been tread by like Fables already, just because Fables has hit so many fairy tales, just to see like other common fairy tales reused, like Lord Oberon and Titania or whatever in comics, is kind of feels weird now.
Yeah, this is a little more about like memory and imagination.
The idea is like one of the worlds, the Everglades, I think, or there's the Land of Maybe, where basically anything that could have ever happened has happened.
Yeah,
which is pretty interesting.
Yeah,
and I think what separates this from Fables is instead of being an insider look at all this stuff, like how Fables dives right into the politics and everything, this is kind of an outsider looking in. It's more traditional storytelling than
finding
Fables,
a fantasy world. Yeah,
and I think it's cool. I like it.
Yeah,
it's fun. It's a miniseries, right? I think it's just
five or six
issues, And it seems to be moving along at a good pace.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought this was a great second issue.
Yeah.
Yep. Plus, Schrodinger's cat's one of the main characters.
Yeah.
That's definitely true. all right. So moving on to Prophet number 21.
Yeah.
This is written by Brandon Graham, who is known or isn't known. He should be more known. But he writes King City and draws King City and also multiple warheads. He writes and draws that. He's kind of, you know, similar to James Stokoe, who does Orcstain. But anyway, he wrote it. And the art's by Simon Roy,
who
I've never seen before, but he's pretty good. Yeah.
For this being a shallow or light week of comics.
Amazing.
This right here redeems everything that happened this week.
Definitely.
This is better than Prophet 1 through 20 put together.
Yeah, I had never seen Prophet because
I
kind of got away from that kind of comic when those kind of comics were coming out.
We should explain because if you've never heard of Prophet,
or Extreme Studios.
It. Yeah, Extreme Studios is like Rob Liefeld's line at Image or whatever.
Yeah, and so most of the series made it. It seems about 20 issues, and they stopped sometime in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah,
and so now he's bringing it back and relaunching it, but with much more interesting creators like Brandon Graham, or like Ross Campbell.
But yeah, he's bringing back almost two or three or four of these.
Yeah, it's Prophet and it's Glory and
Young Blood,
which that one's gonna be crap because he's drawing that one, and then not Blood Strike.
Blood Sport. Yeah, whatever.
Blood Death and Young. Wait, what is it?
And Lady Blood.
It's Blood Strike.
Yeah.
And Young Blood. Don't look that good, but Prophet and Glory look pretty awesome.
Yeah. And this is the first one of these relaunches that have come out. So we'll see how the other ones are. But this one is astounding.
Oh, yeah. There's also a Supreme one coming out. Which
oh, my
is
God.
The Alan Moore. It's like Alan Moore's last two issues, whatever. But anyway, yeah. Prophet was awesome. It's basically, I don't even know how to explain the plot. This guy lands on a planet. He's got some supplies, and he does some things with and to aliens.
Yeah, we're kind of at a disadvantage because we haven't read the old Prophets to see.
I don't feel like it
ties into the old one at all. Because he doesn't land on a planet. He comes in some sort of mole man burrowing machine up out of the earth, and it's like a thousand years have passed.
It's not another planet. It's Earth.
He's been in slumber. And everything's evolved.
Is he like an old hero from the 1990s Prophet who slept for a thousand years? He could be the same dude.
Yeah, he doesn't look anything like Prophet.
Yeah. Well, the original Prophet was drawn by Splat,
Stephen Platt, the worst artist of all time.
Yeah. And he had big helmets.
Shoulder pads,
some fuzzy boots.
Pockets and buckles.
He actually didn't have as many pouches as some of the other folks had.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
He had a big sword.
But so this guy wakes up on the Earth, and basically it's kind of been taken over by cannibals and aliens. Like the humans have kind of reverted to cannibalism and tribal craziness.
Of the Apes if aliens had landed instead of apes.
Or no, if just everything else evolved, basically.
Yeah.
These are all crazy evolved parasites.
I don't know, man. There's definitely crashed spaceships all over the place.
Oh, yeah, but those are all human spaceships.
Not the big...
Oh, yeah, there's that big jellyfish thing.
Jelly one.
Yeah there's
that could still be some kind of evolved thing that crashed or something.
Anyway, it's kind of hard to talk about this.
It's awesome.
Here's the thing. To describe what happens in this comic is to kind of give away...
Right.
I don't want to say give away too much, but it's like...
It ruins the fun of the
adventure. It's like when you see, we already talked about the jelly spaceship thing. Yeah. It's like when you see that stuff, those are the cool moments in this comic. Yeah. It's not really a very story-driven comic. It's just kind of like he's going from point A to point B, and what he comes across on his journey is interesting.
Yeah.
So,
and visually amazing.
Yeah, if you like Orcstain, King City.
I'd even say non-player in some ways, exploring a crazy new world with really good art.
Yeah, it's just a really, really good comic.
Solid.
It is solid like a rock or like a jellyfish. Solid like a jellyfish.
It's like a 1,000,000% improvement over issue 20.
I'm assuming. Yeah, it must be. But no, it's very cool, and I'm definitely excited to see what's going to happen. It definitely has that kind of Mobius feel to it, and the art's great.
Yeah.
It's very solid art. Nick said it's better than Brandon Graham, but I don't agree.
Yeah, whatever.
But it's still awesome. Yeah. All right, so moving on to Raw Power Number 1 by Josh Bayer. So this is the next issue of the Retrofit series, which is, I think, Box Brown is publishing these. And we've talked about Fungus and Drag Bandits and Bowman.
This is the annual?
Yeah. So yeah, this is that's not the little mini comic size, but this is this comic or magazine size?
I'd say it's Golden Age size.
Golden Age size.
Or potentially magazine size.
Twice as long as the other ones?
Yeah, it was pretty long. I'd say it was probably about 56 pages, something like that. So the basic idea behind this is pretty funny. Basically, there was a YouTube video where Jello Biafra said that Jimmy Carter was like intimidating record labels to get them to not sign punk bands because he wanted to quell unrest like in the late 70s.
Yeah.
And so, sorry, what's his name again? Josh Bayer, who I think was the editor of that Nancy Suspect Device anthology that came out. Yeah, but Josh, he took that idea and turned it into this crazy story about...
I don't even know what.
Well, it's I would say the main story, there are two main stories. There's the Jimmy Carter enlisting G. Gordon Liddy to you know, crush the punk rock underground, which is really funny. And there's there's some really funny scenes where like G. Gordon Liddy's on a talk show and then the guy who's like in catering services like wearing a Black Flag t-shirt and starts yelling at him and G. Gordon Liddy like like almost stabs him to death.
Yeah.
And then that's mixed with this other story of this superhero, Catman, if you want to call him a superhero, called Catman, who's only loosely tied to the other the other thing because his favorite book is Wish Power, which was a G. Gordon Liddy autobiography from the 80s that was really popular. And that was his favorite book in fifth grade.
And so. He wants to beat up punks.
And he does. He wants to beat up punks because he finds them vile or whatever.
And so he's traumatized by punks as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's in a crowd. He sees somebody that looks slightly more punk than everybody else. He starts attacking him.
He's in the middle of like stopping a domestic abuse. And then he just sees like a punk and just like goes and beats the crap out of him. Yeah. It's really, really strange. So there's all that. And then the last third of this book is an adaptation of an issue of DP7.
Yeah. Yeah,
the old Marvel sci-fi slash superhero comic from the 80s.
Yeah, and it seems to be basically a direct adaptation of it.
Where he just took all the dialogue and redrew it.
Yeah.
I think he changed the dialogue.
He changed it a little bit, but
no, he reprinted
there's
it
a page in the back, and the dialogue's almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
But, and it's bonkers.
It's crazy. It's about a guy who shoots fire out of his body.
Yeah, so this whole issue was insane.
Yeah.
Bayer's art style is probably not going to be to everybody's taste.
It was definitely not to mine.
Yeah, I could tell even reading it that it was something that Jared would not like.
Yeah.
It's a weird, like almost like crumb, but a little more sketchy. And
yeah, I think that was the thing. It was like it was at the point where I feel like if he'd done a little bit more with it, it would have been amazing. Like there's like a few like panels where it'd be like even more faded out than some of the others. And those I felt were even better than the ones that were like inked more or penciled harder or something, and yet he didn't do that much. I don't know.
Yeah, he's got a weird style. It's kind of like Bill Plimpton, if you guys know Bill Plimpton cartoons, but even more grotesque.
Yeah.
And then mixed with a little bit of Robert Crumb, and then some stuff's really over rendered in a really gross kind of way.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I found it pretty interesting though. I really liked it.
It's definitely unique.
yeah. I mean, if you're looking for like a weird little thing to read, I enjoyed it a lot actually.
Yeah.
I kind of know a little bit about G. Gordon Liddy though, and I used to listen to punk music when I was a kid, I used to listen to like Jello Biafra spoken word tapes and stuff, and I don't know. So this kind of appeals to sensibilities that I have.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it was a weird book.
Yeah, it was weird, but it did not completely.
I'm like, I'm trying to think of if you like this, you'll probably like it. But I don't even know what it's like.
It feels like some weird underground comic from like the 70s or 80s.
It definitely does. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but anyway, so it's not exactly a recommend, but if like you're the person, you know who I'm talking to.
Yeah. If you're excited by something new and different.
If you're the guy, you know you're the guy. And you should get this book.
You'll be at the store tomorrow.
Mario Alipio, you should buy this book. Yeah. All right. So moving on to Steed and Mrs. Peel, number 1 of 6 by Grant Morrison and Ian Gibson. So this is an Avengers comic. So
not the superhero Avengers.
Yeah, Avengers the 60s TV show with Emma Peel and Mr. Steed, and
actually watched. Is it just like a spy drama?
It's great. I mean, have you ever seen The Saint or The Prisoner?
Yes. Or the Avengers movie from the 90s?
Oh God, I forgot.
Yeah, that one's really bad. But
see that.
It's very similar to, I would say, The Saint, but with slightly more swinging 60s elements and kind of like the sci-fi elements of The Prisoner a little bit, or like Thunderbirds.
And also, I feel like this is another case where they couldn't actually call it The Avengers.
No.
Well, and the comic, I should say, this is a reprint of a series that came out in 1990.
Yep. Yeah.
And it was called Steed and Mrs. Peel when it came out originally as well. Steed and Mrs. Peel. This is written by Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
And the art's by Ian Gibson. I might have already said that.
You did.
I feel like this is the first comic that Grant Morrison wrote.
Yeah, but I should reiterate that this was written by Grant Morrison.
Yep.
But like Nick said,
in like 1990. Yeah, it's it had some cool ideas. There's like a cool part where they go to this guy's house and it's all game stuff. Like there's giant clue set pieces everywhere, and the garden is inside of a giant bottle with a ship in it.
Yeah, it's very surreal and trippy, but very 60s.
But everything else is completely uninteresting.
Yeah, basically there's this guy who's killed, and they find this single die on him, and it leads them to this club of people who love to play games. Yeah. And then
the murder is pretty funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's like this like old sea captain. He's like, they'll never take me to Davy Jones locker. And it cuts to him like tied to an anchor at the bottom.
Yeah. Just like all of a sudden. It's really strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that great.
No.
Yeah. I mean, if you like Avengers, I guess it's pretty cool.
No, because I like Avengers.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, we got no selling points.
It's got some Avengers.
There's not much good about this. And it's like if you're coming into this and you're thinking, oh, it's Grant Morrison.
That's what I was doing.
It's still not good.
Yeah, it's like Grant Morrison when he was 10.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to Steve Canyon, Volume 1, 1947 to 1948, hardcover by Milton Caniff.
Mind exploded by awesomeness.
Talk about night and day between these two. I mean, Steve Canyon. Milton Caniff is...
Well, hey, this is Milton Caniff at the top of his game, not the first comic he ever did. So.
Well, yeah, no, that's true.
Okay.
But Milton Caniff's still better than Grant Morrison forever. So basically, people probably don't understand how popular Milton Caniff and the Steve Canyon series was. But Jared, you were reading a little bit of the introduction in this book, and you saw something that was pretty interesting.
Had he done a few before Steve Canyon?
Well, sure. He had done Terry and the Pirates for...
No, sorry. That's what I meant. Sorry. Terry and the Pirates was, I mean, but before that.
Maybe. I mean, like I know he... things. I think he just kind of trained under Roy Crane, who did Captain Easy and Buzz Sawyer and some other stuff. And
then he started Terry and the Pirates in what, like the late
42?
Was it 42 even?
Maybe, maybe it was late 30s. But
basically, he himself didn't serve in the military during World War II, but he did this amazing comic called Terry and the Pirates, which was like one of the quintessential adventure strips. You know, this pilot flying around Asia and like getting all sorts of adventures with all kinds of very, you know, exciting characters and all this stuff. The key point of this is that Terry and the Pirates became the most popular comic strip of the time. It was just like immensely popular. And then the war ended and he had him retire. Yeah. And so he said, I'm going to have my characters retire and I'm going to start a new comic strip. So he started up this. And when, after he got it all, his ideas ready and he's going to be published for the first time in the newspaper strip, it was such an event. It made the cover of Time magazine.
Nice.
I mean, it's just astounding.
Which is pretty amazing. But was it on My Fox 5?
I mean, it does have some sexy women.
It has a lot of sexy
blood
women.
Splattering violence.
It's amazing. And no kids, though.
Yes.
Some minors.
So Steve Canyon is...
which is interesting that Steve Canyon, the character who's the lead of this, is an ex-pilot from the Air Force in World War II. And it's now 46 or 47, so the war's over. And he's got a shipping company. He's got an old... It's like he flies the Millennium Falcon. He's got this old beat-up airplane that he's still trying to fly. He's got no money. He's got like one girl who helps him out at his office and just like completely underwater. And then through a lot of shenanigans and hijinks, he starts getting jobs again and recruits his old like war buddies to restaff his plane and basically ends up ferrying people around on missions and getting involved in adventures. And it's like the greatest adventure stuff I've ever read.
Yeah, no. And it's fantastic. I mean, it's Milton Caniff, you know?
Yeah. But people don't know. And tell them about the art because, oh my God.
Yeah, I don't even know how to describe the art except that it's Milton Caniff. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Chester Gould, who does Dick Tracy, but much more refined. He's got his line work is fantastic. I mean, he obviously learned from Roy Crane, who's one of the greatest cartoonists of all time.
Yeah.
I don't really know how to describe. I mean, his women are always.
There's a look to them. They're all Caniff women.
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I could describe the art a little bit better, but he's definitely one of my favorite artists of all time.
It's crazy.
And it's beautiful reproduction. I don't know if they shot from originals or not, but there are a few strips every so often that's a little blurry, but on the whole, they're very cleanly cut. You can really see a lot of the line work. And since this is one of the nice deluxe IDW books, they've got a color Sunday, which takes up one page, and they've got the six strips of the week, and then that's on two pages, and you turn to the next page, and then they're back to a color Sunday. And it's just a beautiful contrast between them. The color Sundays kind of rehash a little bit of what happened during the week, but also give new information, so they flow together really well. And he does, you know, this is what, 2 years of strip, So he goes on like one adventure, you know, to go rescue someone and fly him back to America.
Yeah, it's basically one story about him ferrying this woman, the Copperhead, everybody calls
right.
her. Yeah, yeah.
But then after that, he goes on another thing where he ends up like running around in America, and he ends up like with, I think the most exciting part, I've only read about half of this book so far, ends up with like an old kind of dude who's like basically finances their adventures because he's only lived on this little farm in
Is
the middle.
Is that Easter?
Yeah.
Oh, Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. Who's the guy's name? Who's just this crazy old coot, but has enough money to basically say, I really liked reading those Arabian Nights stories. Why don't you fly me around like you're a magic carpet? And then, hey, they've got money and they go on having adventures all over the world.
And I think the thing is, people think of these old strips as being like very stodgy.
Oh, my God.
Or like kind of boring to read. But the humor in this is great. Yeah. I mean, even just the first strip is like somebody calling for Steve Canyon and his secretary is like, oh, I have a message for you. Why don't you go fry your hat?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, just like like sharp stuff like that. Yeah. And a lot of times in serialized strips, it's kind of like adventure stories like this. You do kind of feel like they're telling the story over and over again. But I don't really get the sense with this.
No, this I think this was just so big at the time that everyone's going to be reading it. No one would be missing a thing. So you don't get like the first panel of one thing is a reprint of what happened in the last panel of the last one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like full of like two-fisted action and like, you know, lots of beautiful girls and betrayals and crime and, you know, international syndicates and lots of plane flying and guns. And it's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
We couldn't recommend it higher.
Yeah. Oh, and the other thing I will say is that this is a very deluxe, expensive book. So it's what, $50 or whatever?
Yep.
But it's 2 years. It's like 300 or 400 pages. And he packed a lot of story and a lot of dialogue into this. It's not like you're reading a quick modern comic where you're just flipping pages.
No, this will take you like 1 year to read.
Yeah, and you will get your money's worth.
Definitely. So that's Steve Canyon, Volume 1, 1947 to 1948. Probably my pick of the week, probably Jared's. Yep. Nick's is probably Prophet 21.
Yeah.
But we do have one more book, and that is the 12, Volume 1 softcover by J. Michael Straczynski.
Ooh, this might be my big
one. It's so good, and with art by Chris Weston. I think the last issue of this came out before Babylon 5 started.
They took a break to do it.
I think it came out back when DC was not as sexy and blood splattery.
That's true.
But yeah, the 12 is basically about these 12 heroes from World War II that got, what did they get? Sleeping
frozen
gas? They get frozen in a cave or something, and then they wake up like now in modern times.
Yeah, basically.
Well, they wake up in like 2007.
Basically, that's true. Yeah. Basically, like the Germans are trying to capture all these heroes to make them work
you mean
for them.
The Nazis.
Yeah, the Nazis. And they're like, oh, we're going to come back here and you know, unfreeze these guys, and they're going to be our secret weapon. And then the Russians invade and take out all
and
the Germans.
Kill them all.
And so these guys just get stuck there.
Yeah. And they get, it's mostly about them coming back and trying to adapt to this world that's changed. It's kind of taken the kind of basic Captain America
premise,
but twisting it a little bit. Like each character, basically each issue is, it's 12 issues, and each issue is focusing on one of the characters and their backstory, mixed with kind of a bigger ongoing story where a bunch of them are getting killed and different people are dying, and there's like a good mystery building.
This might be older than 2007. Didn't this come out when like Civil War was still going on?
No,
this is after Civil War, because literally the reason that these guys are brought, well, when they're brought back to consciousness in the modern time or whatever, they're recruited by the government because Civil War has just happened. And they said, these people, you know, believed in America. It's from the 40s.
Yeah,
they're still very patriotic.
Yeah.
So we were going to hire them as government agents who will be proud to work for the country and not those wishy-washy, you know, Captain America loving people who don't want to take their masks off. And
yeah, and I thought this would never end, but they just announced that they're going to finally finish it. There was a huge gap.
Yeah. Yeah, what does that have, 6 more issues or something?
No, they did more. 7 or 8 before they stopped, and then, yeah.
Yeah, so each story is fun. It's kind of takes the fish out of water thing. It's a little funnier than you would think it would be.
Yeah,
like, some of it's really funny.
Yeah, some of it's really dark, too.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
It's really depressing at times, yeah.
But no, I mean,
it's a great mix. You know, you've got a lot, like Nick said, just all the characters are really well done. So you've got, you know, like the Jewish superhero who kind of had to repress the fact that he was a Jew so that he could survive in the society of the 40s. And now things have changed. And of course, the Captain America thing where their person's families all died while he was frozen and stuff like that. Yeah. So they work with a lot of interesting stuff like that.
What's the name of the cave dude, the rock guy, whatever?
Just Rockman or something?
Yeah.
Rockman. That guy has one of the most depressing origins I've ever seen. It's pretty great. I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but that, because that's part of the fun of it.
It's very pulpy style, too, to being a modern comic. These are all pulp heroes.
There's
it's
a cool mystery that I really finally want to see resolved.
That's definitely true.
But yeah, this is definitely, for a lot of people, have been burned by Straczynski. So we still don't know how this is going to end, but this is very promising and very strong.
I think you could already consider this being burned by Straczynski. I mean, even though it is going to end, I mean, people have been being burned by this for 3 years.
No, but I mean burned, but people, sorry, they've been burned by him not finishing stuff, but I mean burned as that people have been disappointed by the endings of his stories.
Plus, if you've never seen something drawn by Chris Weston, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's great. His style's like kind of weirdly grotesque, almost like hyper-realistic, but it's also really great. It kind of reminds me of
Bill and Cannon.
Paul Gillespie.
Yes. I was trying to think. Yeah.
It's a little bit like that, a little more detailed, but.
But I think better than Paul Gillespie.
Yeah, definitely.
It's so good.
Yeah, no, it's very good. And this is a good collection, and it's definitely worth checking out. If you like, you know, like stuff like Marvel's Project and Astro City and stuff, I think it kind of has that feel a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a good book. And unfortunately, there weren't too many terribly good books this week.
Those are three great ones, though.
But those were three great ones. Yep, the three great ones were Steed and Mrs. Peel, Lord of the Jungle, and Halo Fall of Reach Invasion number one. Good week, you guys. No, those definitely weren't the good ones.
Have we reached the blood-splattering, sexy finale of our episode?
We have, yeah. So I hopefully you didn't let any of your children listen to this, unless they were at a playground in middle school.
Reading their Hustlers.
Yeah, you know what we just did?
What's that?
We just did a podcast that was under an hour.
Woo!
Yay!
Jackpot.
Yeah, so... I don't know. Hopefully there'll be a bunch of good stuff next week.
Yep.
And I guess we'll see you guys then.
Good day.